The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante. You're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. And with me today is Casey Limmer. Casey is the owner and founder of a wellness cooperative known as Gateway Wellness Associates here in St. Louis, Missouri. She also owns a group private practice called St. Louis DBT, specializing in helping suicidal and self-injurious people. She was a professor at Washington University's Brown School of Social Work for 10 years, teaching courses in cognitive behavioral therapy. And Casey, I am so glad you are here with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Amanda, for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. And I really, you know, we are, as we record this episode, sitting here amid a crisis unlike the world has experienced, especially in our modern times. The coronavirus pandemic is sweeping the nation. And in your line of work, dealing with people who are experiencing anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, I just think that my heart goes out to you, and I'm just amazed at the work that you do. First off, just in awe of it every day, but especially during this time. How does something like this change the way that you're doing your work?
Well, these are truly, truly interesting times that we are living in. We are preparing for the worst and yet also seeing the best in people as they're navigating some incredible amounts of uncertainty. And I think that as a group, as a community of wellness professionals, I think a lot of us are kind of hunkering down for what this is going to look like in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, as people, the novelty of being online all the time or being at home wears off, and the isolation truly, truly gets to settle in.
Yeah, and of course, you know, some of the common signs of depression, right? We talk about people isolating. You know, how much does this feed the disease?
So much so. I know you and I have talked about depression and anxiety and suicidality. And I think isolation feeds those animals in different ways. It's kind of like having a cat, a dog, and a fish in the house. They all eat different things, but one of the things that feeds them all is isolation. And depression is fed by isolation because depression is one of those animals that wants isolation. It encourages us to sleep, to hibernate, to pull away socially. And here we are sort of in this society where everybody is physically having to pull away socially. But then there's also this component of being online and connecting, and people who are depressed and feeling the full brunt of this isolation may not have the social wherewithal or already have the social components in their lives that they can reach out to. So they're even more isolated. Whereas with anxiety, isolation fuels anxiety because we're sort of stuck in this bubble with all of our own thoughts and anxieties turning around, and we don't have contact with other people to distract us from our own brains. So isolation feeds anxiety in a slightly different way.
Absolutely. I am experiencing that myself. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. All right, you know, we've got this situation going on. What are some of the things that you're telling people to do? You know, as a mental health professional, someone that deals in this all the time and really, you know, tries to encourage people to break patterns of isolation, when you're given this kind of situation, you know, what kind of advice can you give people to go ahead and continue connecting and reaching out?
Well, you know, emotions are complex things. And so when it comes to feeling a certain way, so let's take depressed for an example. When we feel depressed, there are physical components of that. So we feel the sensations of heaviness and lethargy and crying spells, like this just urge comes over us to just cry and crumple. We might be more tired. We might be more agitated and more likely to just kind of bite the head off of folks that are around us. So again, we have those urges to isolate and the actions that follow that. So what I tell folks is a lot of times they get the advice to, oh, you need to think more positively. Well, that's dang near impossible right now. And so we're asking folks that are sad to, oh, think more positively. Think about the silver lining. But we forget that the cloud is just as important as the silver lining. So I'm telling folks, you know, be willing to talk about how you're feeling, but also be willing to do some different things to create routines, to get outside, to exercise in different ways. Change what you can. If you can't change your thoughts, change your body. Even in small little ways, it will improve all of the other aspects of the emotion.
And I think that's incredible advice. Another question that I have for you, you know, in a time where the only real way that we can connect with people is through technology, you know, how authentic can that connection be? And what are some of the pitfalls that people might be experiencing as they attempt to try and reach out and connect through tech?
Well, I am the daughter of a man who has always had tech difficulties, and he is, I see the struggles that he goes through, and it makes me sad and concerned for folks who have gotten this far and they're not tech savvy or they're even tech phobic. My dad is quite tech phobic, and you know, I think it's hard for him. He has depression, and he also can see that people are connecting and he's unable to, and he's a very interactive, outgoing guy normally when he's not depressed. So I would say for folks like that, if you're not feeling comfortable with technology, don't stay on a screen the whole day. TV is not going to be your savior. Go outside, sit on the porch. People are out. People are out in droves, more than I've ever seen. Just keep your 6 feet of distance. And, you know, don't be afraid to smile. We can't catch the virus by smiling or waving at one another. I see a lot of people walking around with their eyes diverted down as though the enemy walks among us, you know.
I've noticed that, too. I went for a walk the last couple of days. I've gotten out and taken my dog for a walk, which, shame on me, I should do that every day. That shouldn't be just now, right?
Oh, I know. My dog's exhausted right now.
Yeah, no, but it is interesting, right? There's this tendency for people to not engage right now, and yeah, to look down or to you know, move. And of course, we should be keeping that 6 feet distance, but you know, really dramatically move to the side and look down as they do it. And you know, I'm just maintaining eye contact and smiling. I'm still stepping over my few feet as well. But I think that there's something really powerful in maintaining that eye contact and smiling and just letting people know, hey, I'm here. You're here. I'm here. Yeah. We're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there are some differences in tech that are scary for some folks, and other folks, they're just not even seeing much of a difference. You know, my kids, I don't think they see much of a difference right now. They love tech. They're used to it. I'm just trying to encourage them to actually do more games that are interactive with their friends. My daughter's doing Roblox now, R-O-B-L-O-X, and it's kind of like a kid's Sims where her and her friends can create houses and towns and theme parks, and they can talk and chat. So they're still getting that interaction, and they're apparently learning coding or something at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Why would they use this opportunity to learn new things and get comfortable with tech?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for all of us to find new ways to connect. I know you and I were on a call earlier today for wellness professionals, you and a lovely person from Acadia Treatment Centers, correct? Jessica mm-hmm. Torrey.
Yep. Jessica Torrey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Torrey. We were all together earlier and doing a Zoom call with mental health and wellness professionals. And I think that a lot of people are finding ways like that. I'm even seeing virtual happy hours pop up, you know, really making extra effort to try and connect with each other online. And I'm also getting a lot of calls from friends and family that I haven't heard from in a while. They're just, you know, just reaching out to say hi. And I've been sending, sending texts and sending messages and just say, how are you holding up? Like, how are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And just touching base and checking in. And I think that can make all the difference in the world. One other thing I wanted to talk about with regard to tech and get your opinion on, your input and insights regarding, you know, social media. I think a lot of people are turning to social media to connect more, and they're spending mm-hmm. more time on social media. And for people with depression or anxiety, of course, we can get caught into comparison traps and all kinds of other things can maybe go awry with social media. What are your thoughts on social media in general, and especially during this time?
I have found that with my clients, and I've actually talked to quite a few of them about this, you know, what social media platforms are you using? What impact does it have on your anxiety? Are you getting good information? Are you getting social connection from those? And if you're not getting good information, the information that you're getting is from, you know, your Uncle Joe in Wyoming about how there's no coronavirus there and it's all just a scam, you know, maybe limit those types of contacts that aren't helpful for you right now. So several of my clients have taken a break from Facebook and are instead just on their Instagram feeds, which tend to be more positive, less laden with false information or even opinions. It tends to be more visual. So they're on that. They're on Snapchat when they're communicating with their loved ones. So it's really, I think, about picking a platform that isn't contributing to your anxieties.
I think that's great advice. And, you know, I want to also talk about, I'm going to segue into a little bit of a heavier subject and subject that you deal with frequently. And first, I want to say, you know, I want to get the terminology around this subject matter right and honor it. So when we talk about, you know, you deal a lot in dialectical behavioral therapy. Is that correct? Did I say that right?
Yes, thank you. My mother still tells people I do diabolical behavior therapy,
which is
not right.
Which is totally different. Totally Dr. Different. Evil, you are not.
No.
So yeah, none of that. So dialectical behavioral therapy, and you deal a lot with patients who have what's termed suicidal ideation. Is that the correct terminology?
Yes, that is. We are kind of moving away from the terminology of talking about suicide as one thing, especially talking about it as committing suicide. Committing has this connotation of criminality, and we don't say that people commit cancer. So we try to get away from that. So we talk a lot in terms of the act of suicide, the urges of suicide, and the thoughts of suicide. And by talking about those three things as different things, it also helps us as a society to separate those. And why that's important is because we have a tendency as a society that when we hear people talk about wanting to give up or give in, we immediately assume that they have a plan to do that and that they are a danger to themselves. So that makes it less likely that people are actually going to talk about the thoughts and the feelings and the things that are going on with them. So I'm trying to decrease the stigma and recognize that thoughts are different from urges, which are different from actions.
How do you work to support, I don't even know where to start with that topic. It tugs at my heart so much. you know, how do you work to support people who are dealing with suicidal ideation and in these various stages?
We often tell them and start off by letting them know that as a DBT therapist, my last resort is hospitalization, and that goes doubly right now. The last healthy place, the least healthy place to be right now is in an ER. Not only is it going to be physically unsafe as there's exposure potentially to virus, but it's you're probably not going to get seen for about 10 to 24 hours the way that people are stacking up in our ERs. So, but even without what's going on right now, our last resort is hospitalization. We don't particularly find it helpful. There are no studies that demonstrate that hospitalization is particularly helpful. The only times when I hospitalize is if somebody has taken action and we need to get them physically stable, or if there's a psychotic episode going along with it, or if there's a need for a medication change immediately. But otherwise, I let people know it's a safe place here for you to talk about those thoughts and feelings. And I might be concerned for you, but I'm not going to get scared about that, because people can have thoughts and not follow through with those. So that's where we start.
Okay. And during this time of crisis, you know, what are you saying to your patients? What are you saying to their support system, their loved ones and their network, to help them to cope with and deal with this time of crisis?
We really try to bring in their network as much as possible, because oftentimes folks that are suicidal need some validation of the extreme levels of feeling that they're having. We have a lot of family members who say, well, I don't want to talk to them about it because I don't want to encourage that, or I don't want them to, you know, the more they talk about it, the more they're going to think about it. And that's rarely true. What we've found is that when a person is allowed to talk about it, those feelings tend to subside. They feel heard. They don't feel alone in it. And we talked earlier about isolation. People can be around other people and still feel isolated if they can't share their true thoughts and feelings. So if you suspect somebody that you love is feeling suicidal or thinking about ending their life, let them know that you know that that's something they're considering and that they can talk about it. Now, that said, I think all things should be in moderation. So if they've been going on for 20, 30 minutes talking about it, might be a good time to try to distract, try to get the conversation going in a different direction, talking about things to live for, even talking about just random things that you're reading about, or getting their minds off of it for a bit. But don't be afraid to, at the end of that conversation, to circle back to it and say, you know what, at the beginning of our conversation, you were feeling like ending your life. How do you feel now that we've connected, now that we've had this chat? You're not reintroducing something to them. It's there, whether you are hearing it or not, it's already there. So you're just saying, hey, I know it's there. And you're modeling for them that they can actually take a break from those thoughts. And by doing so, you can highlight that, hey, maybe when we started this conversation, you were at a 9 on a 1 to 10 scale of being suicidal. But now that we've had this chat, you're at a 6. So how do you explain that? You know, distraction helps. Connection helps. Let's do more of that.
That makes all kinds of sense. And, you know, I think you touched on something there where you were saying, you know, you're not putting these ideas in their head. You're not bringing them back to them, making them think about it more. How much do you hear from, or how often do you hear from caregivers to people who are dealing with suicidal ideation, you know, that they feel responsible, or they feel like, you know, they can't have that conversation because then it's going to remind them, and then that might, you know, are they're afraid that they're fueling or feeding it. And how do you ease their mind, You know, some of what you just said helps, but, you know, I feel like that's just such a weight to bear.
I tell my folks, our families and supporters, that we give ourselves a little too much credit when it comes to our ability to influence our loved ones. So on one hand, you talking about it, you bringing it up, you saying, hey, I'm concerned about you. Hey, I've heard, you know, you posted a poem and I hear some suicidal ideation in there. I just want to check in on you. Like, you bringing it up does not have the power to put that in their minds. It is already there. What your power is in partnership. You have a power in partnership to be able to say, hey, we are all going through some stuff right now. We are all stressed out to the max. You're not alone. And that's what people really need to hear. I think as caretakers and loved ones, we also have this sense of that people who are considering suicide are selfish, that they're not thinking of other people. They're not going to want to reach out to other people. And that's just typically really untrue. When people are considering suicide, it often is that they're thinking about other people. But what they're thinking is, I'm too much of a burden on my loved ones. Yes, they would be in pain. They would hurt for a little while when I first do it, but ultimately they're going to be better off. So something that they need to hear from us is that they have value. They have value to us long term. And it might be hard for them to hear in the beginning when they feel so just completely invalid and not valuable at all. But keep telling them. Keep giving them specific examples of the ways that they contribute to your life.
That resonates so incredibly much with me, having been through depression, anxiety, and at times suicidal ideation myself during the pits of my autoimmune disease. You know, at times when I was completely bedridden and unable to really be there as a mom or be there as a wife or be there as a friend, you know, and really feeling that I was a burden to everyone around me because of my health situation. There were moments that I thought, you know, it might be better if I weren't here. You know, so yeah, those conversations, those moments when people reached out to me and said, you know, hey, I'm just really looking forward to when you get well because, you know, or hey, you make a difference in my life and here's why. And just those moments and those conversations can be everything. They can mean everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Casey, I want to just give you, we're getting close on time here. I want you to just talk a little bit about your practice and Gateway Wellness Associates as well, and just let people know how they can reach out to you and some of the things that you've got coming up.
Sure. So St. Louis DBT, Dialectical Behavior Therapy is what that stands for, is my private practice. We are a group of 15 amazing therapists who specialize in treating depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts and actions, as well as self-injury and impulsive types of behaviors. We offer fully adherent DBT, and what that means is that people in our program get sort of wraparound services. They get individual therapy, they get a group skills class, which is kind of taught like a class, where people learn skills like how to be effective in their relationships, how to tolerate stress, and how to regulate their emotions, as well as how to be more mindful and present. So they get individual group skills as well as 24/7 coaching. So that means that their therapist is available for a quick, you know, 5-minute phone call when they are in need of another skill, something to do other than whatever their problem behavior is. So that's St. Louis DBT, and if you're interested in any of those services or if that sounds like something that a loved one could use, you can get more information about us on our website, which is stldbt.com. www.thepersonalhealthcoach.com. And our phone number is 314-932-7415. The other organization that I run is Gateway Wellness Associates. We are a collaborative of people in private practice, various wellness professionals, and we provide office space, which at this moment is completely vacant because nobody's seeing anybody in person anymore. But we also offer educational opportunities, including a monthly series of workshops centered around bringing wellness professionals together in different arenas of wellness, from therapists, social workers, dietitians, health coaches, doctors, chiropractors, all kinds of folks all together in one room. So you can get more information about that on our website, GWA, that stands for Gateway Wellness Associates, -STL.com.
All right. Well, Casey Limmer, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Amanda.
This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. I want to say thank you to AFC Urgent Care of Brentwood for sponsoring and underwriting Get Real to Heal. And for information from me, you can reach out at amandalaplante.com or give me a call and set up a free consultation anytime. I am an integrative health coach, and during times like these, taking care of your health should be number one. I'm here to support you. 314-583-6749 if you want to give me a call. And for this and other episodes of Get Real to Heal, check it out on soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal. Make it a great day.